While I'm quite certain that I'm not alone in feeling that there's no good news left these days, and I feel like in some ways, at least more recently, the news feels like there's nothing that I can do to personally change it. Even this morning, I was reading that there was a lot of, the word apocalypse was in a lot of headlines referring to fires and natural disasters and oceans and climate change. And this week, somebody sent me one of those food for thought things, and it said, being healthy is the longest way to die. I thought, just the news gets more cheerful every time. And as we enter into the dog days of winter, they say, and that darkness that just seems to come over, and I know I should turn off the TV and stop reading articles on the internet. And while I normally follow the lectionary readings in its entirety, this morning it was such a discouraging jumble of corrupt governments, catastrophic events, cruelty, rumors of war and end times, and apocalyptic readings that I actually backtracked one of the readings to Daniel, because that was the story that kind of came into my mind of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So if you heard a sermon on this a few weeks ago, I apologize. But that's just kind of where my heart was this morning. And as I began to study their response to their world turned upside down, I also began to see some of the points of wisdom that came out for me. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego spoke to me specifically in their response in verse 18 that says, even if God does not. Even. And some of the other translations might use slightly different words, but I liked the word even. They are facing the burning flames, not just the anger of a powerful king, but as our version said, the furious rage of the king. And they are going to die. But their response is, if we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O King. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Did you catch the word even? Even if God does not. They were saying what God does or doesn't do. They're saying God is able, but God may not, doesn't change their faith. They have gotten to the place where they recognize that the plan that may be in their head may not be what God is choosing. And that may be beyond their comprehension. And I wonder, can I find the faith to pray that way? Please, God, heal me of my illnesses. But even if you don't, you are still God. Please, God, fix my financial woes. But even if you don't, I won't resort to stealing. Can I get, even in my faith, to the belief that God is in control regardless of what happens, in spite of my understanding? Please, God, rescue the thousands from the forest fires in California that are still missing. But even if you don't, I will continue to pray. Please, God, rescue soccer boys from flooded caves. Oh, God answered that the one I hoped, the way I hoped he would. C.S. Lewis said, I don't pray because it changes God. I pray because it changes me. And I think that that is what the story calls us to this morning. And I spent some time studying this passage for clues to their faith. And I summarized it in the acronym FIRE. So for those of you that like to keep notes or write something down, write down the word FIRE as an acronym. And it stands for firm, invest, remain, and endure. Stand firm in your faith, invest in your friends, remain calm, and endure rather than explain. And I'll go through each of those. First is F for firm. Despite the decree and the consequences and the wisdom of making another choice, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego continued on in their faith, and more important, their faith practices. There is no magic within the walls of this church. Somehow, the world still seems to think that there is some magic within the church. And we need to disavow of that notion. Following 9/11, attendance church doubled. And 6 weeks later, it was lower than it was before the start of 9/11. And really, when the world tragedies draw people into our churches, we need to tell them there's no magic here. There are practices that we do each and every day that help us draw closer to God, that help us live in a world that is constantly changing and barraging us with bad news. Not all good things will happen, but God is so good. We need to ignore the changing culture and continue on in our faith practices. That does not mean that we don't change anything in the church. We can change the light bulbs. It's okay if the choir comes forward and sings into the microphones instead of staying back where they are. But we need to hold true to the values of prayer and worship and being together. We need to seek to define God and recognize at the same time that that is impossible. I teach meditation techniques, and often I'm called to the bedside and people want to learn them. And I tell them, I'm glad to teach you some meditation and prayer techniques, but let me let you know that it often takes several months before the techniques of prayer and meditation actually take effect. I can teach you how to breathe. I can teach you prayerful techniques, but it's the practice that brings them to full fruition. And it's hard to get started on a meditation and prayer technique when you're under the stress of critical illness and facing life-threatening illness. Why? Because our brains are like, oh my gosh, look what's happening. I can't settle my mind down. I can't sleep. I can't eat. So practice those things, because in the face of incredible trials, they will help you. But they need to be practices. The I stands for invest in your friends. One of the things that is within the walls of this church, and I see daily, every time I come here, is a community of friends. If you are going to face the fiery furnace, whatever that is, make sure you have a few good friends that are willing to stand with you. And the corollary to that is make sure you are one of those friends that's willing to stand in the fiery furnace. Because as we practice together, as we practice our faith and live out our faith in our everyday lives, we are naturally bound to each other and to helping one another. But again, I see in our culture, where are we investing our time these days? When was the last time you got together with friends for a meaningful conversation? I heard last time I was here, you all had a great potluck. We all got together and enjoyed time together. Invest in time together. If you haven't met somebody for a cup of tea or a coffee recently, now's the time to pick up the phone and say, hey, let's get together. Let me see how you're doing. Last time I was here, we read the story of Job not that long ago. And he responded, if you've noticed, at the beginning of his story with, "Naked I come from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return," having lost a devastating amount. The name of the Lord is to be praised. But as you recall from his story, his friend's support was horrendous. People were not there for him, didn't help him to practice his faith and to continue to engage in perhaps those things. And his faith deteriorated, and his language in describing his faith over the course of his story did not hold up as well as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, to be fair, it was a much longer, more torturous ordeal. But still, I wonder how his story would have unfolded if he had friends who, instead of criticizing him, assuming there was something wrong with his faith, assuming that there was something wrong with God, had sat in silent, prayerful meditation with him. The faith of Ruth and Naomi survived and even thrived within the bounds of their relationship and even inspired a whole community. You need friends. You need to invest in your friends. You need to look around and be the friend that will face down the fiery furnace. R stands for remain calm. There's a sign in Bruce's office that says, "I'm Scottish, I don't remain calm." But in the face of distress, we don't have a lot of models for it in our culture for good behavior. Did you see on the news this week there was a story of the Speaker of the House reaming out the members of the legislature for bad behavior? And one of the things he was particularly calling them out on was, "Please stop doing standing ovations and clapping for your party or for various things, because it's slowing down the conversation, it's making it difficult to keep going, we're losing time making decisions because there's, you know, 2 and 3 minute standing ovations every time somebody makes a good point or a good speech." Did you see what they did? Clapped and gave a standing ovation to the Speaker of the House. Which was, you know, the news people were like, "Did you get the irony of that?" We glorify bad behavior. We cheer it on. We like it on Facebook. We spread it around. And I think in some level, it kind of helps us to live vicariously through people's bad behavior that we can see. I mean, I kind of like to watch Judge Judy, even though she behaves badly, because she tells people what she really thinks, and there's some days I wished I had told people what I really think, but it's not a good model. We all want to swear at the driver that is behaving badly, rather than taking a moment to meditate and think, "Maybe I was that driver once that kind of made a mistake and could use a little forgiveness. I was driving here and I missed the exit to the 403, don't ask me how, and then got caught on Highway 25 going the wrong way, so I had to make a U-turn because there's all kinds of construction, and I'm sure, you know, I probably ticked off a few people. So, you know, I really need to look inward when I'm that frustrated." Remaining calm in the face of distress and in the face of a world that doesn't deserve it, perhaps. People would understand it if you lost it. Certainly nobody would have blamed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego if they had let go of a bunch of words that I couldn't repeat from the pulpit. But throughout their ordeal, they never swore at the king or treated him disrespectfully. They referred to him as, "O King, let me tell you." But they put down their boundaries at the same time respectfully and still gave the king his due honor, even though they knew he was going to throw them into the furnace. There was nothing worse that the king could do to them than throw them in the fiery furnace. So why not let the king know what you really think of his monarchy? It is so much easier to get even than to become even in our faith. That's what the world wants us to do. Go around getting even with everybody that's ever offended us. And it will cheer us on. And it will tell us that that's the right thing to do. And it will like us on Facebook. And it will share the video of you cussing out the person at Tim Hortons who got your order wrong. But that's not what we're called to do. We were called to get to even. So that even when things go wrong, we still hang on to our faith and our practices. So E stands for endure, rather than explain. They said, O king, we do not need to defend ourselves to you in this matter. That's the other thing they didn't do. They didn't say, listen, O king, God has given us all these rules, and we've decided, and we've chosen, and we've been doing, and you should know. And by the way, we're one of some of the best administrators you've ever had from your kingdom. And you might remember that a few weeks ago, we interpreted a dream for you that you were incredibly grateful for. O king, we do not need to defend ourselves to you in this matter. We live in a culture where we have to defend ourselves all the time about everything. Look at the TV. How many people are defending themselves all the time? We have worshipped perfectionism. Our God is perfectionism. And when we can't do and be the impossible, we then need to defend ourselves why our homes aren't as spotless and manicured as those on the TV, or why we actually feel tired and want to go home at the end of the day rather than take on more work. Think for a minute. Where are you defending yourself? Even within your own mind. Sometimes we like if somebody asks me about this, I'm going to tell them that, and I'll straighten them out about that, and, you know, I'm sure they're going to ask me about this. We actually have a running defense in our heads all the time. Are you defending yourself in your mind or to your friends about how you've raised your kids? About your past choices? What you did or didn't do? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego tell us to stop investing your energy in defense. They lived a life that stayed true to their values, so they didn't need to defend themselves. Furthermore, they looked at the king and realized they'd be wasting their words and time, and we need to recognize when we're in that position. Jesus recognized that when he was journeying to the cross. He didn't defend himself, remember? Didn't say a word in his defense. Didn't point to all the miracles he'd done, the teaching he'd done, the way his life had unfolded, the wine he'd made at the wedding, which should have made him seriously popular. Didn't talk about his father's plan, because he recognized that the crowd was too agitated, the political climate too toxic, and their minds are made up anyway. So endure rather than explain. The king was in a rage. He was in no place to hear anyway. So between the lives that they led and the climate that they were in, they chose to endure rather than explain. So if coworkers and neighbors are saying ugly things about you, if there is someone who is critical of you and has taken up residence in your head, start telling yourself how you have lived a life full of kindness and love and joy, and you have worked diligently. And start to give them their eviction notice in your head. Do not give legitimacy to other people's nonsense by defending yourself. Because as soon as you start to defend yourself, you give them more airtime as well. Years and years ago, I had a new coworker, came into the office, and a couple weeks later, she's at the water cooler dissing me. And a few people came to the office and said, do you know what so-and-so is saying to you about you? I said, no. And she said, repeated all the nasty things she'd said about me, and she said, what are you going to do about it? Nothing. What do you mean? Aren't you going to go to your supervisor? Aren't you going to go to your boss? Nope. All my work's in on time. I'm here every day on time. I rarely take a sick day. I stay late if there's an emergency order. I respond to my customers. I will not defend myself in this matter. 6 months later, she was gone. Because I didn't defend myself. I didn't want to give her more airtime. To be clear, if you're threatening to throw me in a fiery furnace, my first choice is not to go there. If I'm facing a terrible diagnosis, I am praying for the miracle. But I hope that even if God does not, whatever that is, even if God does not have a plan that is in line with my thoughts, it does not change my plan to be faithful to God and to be faithful to know to what I know God is asking me to do. So, as you go through your week, as you face those fiery furnaces, as you face those times and those voices in your head, I want you to think about how can you be firm in your faith? How can you continue on in your practices? I'd like to challenge you this week to find one way to invest in your friends. Consciously invest in your friends. Whether that's you send a card, a greeting card. Maybe that's you call up and say hi. Maybe that's you go for coffee. Maybe you invite them over for a meal. Maybe you just do something kind for them. But I want you to make a conscious investment in your friends. Think about remaining calm. How can you be the calm person in the middle of it all? And we're all thrown into, you know, the condo board is fighting over how to do things. There's people at the retirement home or the nursing home that aren't doing it the way we want it done. There's neighbors that irritate us to no end. There are people that are going to drive us crazy. How can we remain calm? And fourthly, I want you to spend some time reflecting on where you defend yourself. And think about, are you maybe called to endure rather than explain? So those are my challenges to you. And I pray that as you face the challenges that come in life, that like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you will begin to move your faith to an even place. Amen.